You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org.
Okay,
now,
so
troll on in.
You remember last week we were talking to a group of thousands. We had a whole studio full of people, and we're actually doing it again this week because it was way too long. I mean, way too much to cover in just one segment. And as you know, all of us in the fishery pray and hope for the day that, you know, you remember the old expression, you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, teach a man to fish, you feed him for his life. And that's what we're always worried about in the fishery. And, you know, where's the next generation? Where's the next generation of Kona crab catchers? Or where's the next of longline fishermen? Where's the next guy that's going to go out and put food on his table? Or when is somebody going to come buy our fish? That's all about young people. We're going to talk about that. What, the expression we're going to actually use is capacity building, which I thought is kind of cool. Marlo Sabater, a fishery scientist with the council, it works with a lot of people that are either contracted to the council or interns that are being, you know, working for contractors. It's all about young people, and it's to see the proof in the pudding is kind of neat. We're going to talk to one of them in a bit, but isn't it critical that what we talk about all the time is, let's hope that there's going to be a way to pass the baton on all of this stuff on the new people.
That is correct. Yeah. And looking at the faces of the people around the room, yeah. I feel old, man.
Yeah. No, and, you have no idea what old man feels like. I know about old man. Yeah.
Yeah. So what the council is trying to do is to build capacity in our region for budding new scientists and researchers that's going to be engaged in fishery science as well as fishery management.
You know, one thing I must tell you that's been easy to see is how that's being developed in CNMI, in Samoa, and other places, because it is a really righteous thing when somebody learns. They come up here, they go somewhere, they learn, and then they go back, similar to what you and others have done. But I'm worried about here in the main islands, there's so much distraction going on. How do we get people to stay focused and decide to be part of the fishery?
Right, and we have a couple of folks in this room that's undergoing that process, mm-hmm. and they're they're sticking it here because they love Hawaii, and they're actually doing research and being a productive scientist here in our region. So we're glad that they're here to help us out in gathering data for fisheries management.
Okay, now specifically in that is when we learned about John Wiley and Cassie Hardy before. They came up the same path that some of these other young people did, but they were able to parlay what they were experiencing into an actual business of their own. They are contractors that are working on projects for the council, as is, and we have another one you're going to meet a little bit later on, who is very, very similar, an independent contractor doing work on specific projects. So John Wiley and Cassie Hardy, let's talk about the fact that what you do also encourages people like you were then to aspire to work with you. That must be kind of rewarding.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's really cool to see that full circle of when I was starting out and out of my master's degree at HPU and hooking up with the council and starting that independent contracting work. And now being able to have my own LLC and working with Cassie to train new
interns.
Yeah,
how did that come to fruition, Cassie? I think when I first met you guys, you know, many programs ago, I think I started to ask a question, but how do you guys get together and hook up and decide this is going to be what we're going to do, this venture of ours?
Well, originally, John was on this Kona crab project, and he got injured, so he couldn't go out on the boat. So Malloy pulled me in to work on the Kona crab project, and that's how John and I got paired up.
You didn't injure him, right? You just took advantage
of
the
opportunity. I mean, you got to do whatever you can to get a job.
That's right. That's right. I'm sorry I hit you with the bat, but I really needed the job. But no, seriously, I think that isn't that kind of neat, because I would imagine that in the very beginning, you guys are dipping your toe in the water to see if it's going to work. Can you make a living doing this? Is it going to be work? You know,
and
that must be a big part of what you think about.
It was interesting because we both knew each other from our grad school programs, but we had never worked with each other before. So at the beginning, it was like, will we be able to work well with each other? And we both have different strengths and stuff. So we complement each other in our work. So it worked out pretty well, and we decided we'd make a business out of it.
But isn't it also sort of neat, Cassie, that did you also now are to a point where you need help? You know, it was you guys, and now it's, hey, we need guys.
Yeah, it's really great that we get to be the mentors now. Because just a couple years ago.
I was going to say it wasn't that long ago.
Just a couple years ago, we were in the HPU program. Yeah. And now we are in a position to build the capacity of others. And we get these new students working with us, and we get to teach them the skills that we've learned.
John, what do you get feedback as far as HPU? Because obviously anybody that goes to HPU or any school for that matter, they have to have a game plan where they're going to go afterwards. And if we've got a history of positions or jobs being created as a result of that job or that those courses you took at HPU, there's incentive for somebody to stay with the class because they can be like you or they can be like Cassie.
Yeah, I think it's worked out really well to use that HPU connection and get new and excited scientists to kind of branch out into what they want to do and try new things. And we offer a really great opportunity for them to experience the fisheries and the local
What sort of a commitment do you have to get from an intern so they're going to do what you need them to do? Because obviously nature happens and things happen, but basically you want to count on somebody. You're going to teach them a lot, but they're in return have got to provide the service to you that you need done.
Yeah, so with our interns right now, they work usually about 15 hours a week or so. Mm-hmm. It is a little bit kind of a working timeline. Yeah. Sometimes we don't always know when we're going to be working. So
dip your toe in the water.
Like,
yeah.
We're going to go fish tomorrow. Yeah. I'm like, okay, let's go fish tomorrow. Yeah, yeah. So it has to be a little bit flexible sometimes, but we can usually work with whatever schedule they have to work, like lab hours or anything like that can be really flexible.
Yeah, and I think this is the reason why it's kind of neat is because I just met them. I mean, you know, I met John and Cassie a while ago, and we've done a couple of shows together. And now, and also I want to go back, not just to HPU, but to some other really neat things that happened at school levels. And I want to bring back in the conversation for just a minute another guy who has been doing some work, Zach Yamada, a local boy, and he's the one that's been making the connection between the fishery and the science. And the thing is, I think, Zach, when I met you, I think it was through my through my friend who was living the best of both worlds and being a teacher and also being able to be a mentor. And this was at, I believe, at Mauna Loa School.
Right.
And who's our hero? Who was our hero there? Who was your mentor? Who was your teacher?
Oh, our hero was Aaron Yoshioka.
Yeah. And Aaron was living the dream. And you know, you've now seen this happen yourself. First of all, why did you take the class in the first place?
So I had the luxury of a teacher that actually looked out for me while I was at high school. Mm. And he came up to me and he said, hey, Zach, there's this course on Oahu. I don't know how you're going to find living, whatever.
Yeah, you got to go do something.
Maybe you can go stay with family. So that's what I did. Mm. He said, this seems like along the lines of things you'd be interested
in. What island was that? What was your home island?
Oh, I'm from Maui.
Yeah, that's what I thought,
So I looked through the program. I emailed Aaron, did everything I had to do, and I went. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is a good opportunity for me to learn more about marine biology and get my feet wet.
What I was thinking is, because I go back, and Malloy and I have talked about this for years, and with Mark Mitsuyoshi and some of the other guys, is that there was nothing expected in return, but the opportunity that the council actually funded this because they know it's necessary to plant a seed in some young people and hope that there are guys like you that bite and that like it and that stick with it and become part of it.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've been very lucky. I didn't think I would get to this point. I'm super lucky, but I just took a leap of faith and I did something on my own with nobody to support me, and I just did it.
And that was, I remember like it was yesterday. How long ago was it?
That was,
what year was that?
Was 2014.
That's 5 years. That's when I met you, right? You were a little kid.
I was just
you're still a little kid, by the way, but you're a lot bigger little kid. But you know, and so I also want to make sure that you see what the method of the madness here is in this thing. I'm trying to convince you folks now, particularly you parents and grandparents, to let people know that there is this avenue. You can go to wpcouncil.org and see lots and lots of stuff. But we go from talking to Zach to talking to two graduates, Joe Giglio and Taylor Fendrick. And they are interns right now, working in the program with John and Cassie. And so it must be kind of neat. First, let's go back to you, Joe, and that is to see a guy like Zach, who was a while ago, and yet your similarity is you had no similarity. You didn't know what saltwater was.
Yeah, that's true. I'm originally from Colorado, yeah. So I didn't even see the ocean until I was in fourth grade.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, but like always from when I was a kid, I always wanted to work with the ocean and.
Yeah.
And I'd seen it like in movies and books, and I knew it was out there. I didn't know.
But one of the things that you said, and it was really cool, is that, you know, when a guy like Zach is going to break the ice at a tournament and make people comfortable of working with people that are not the same as they are, you said before, when you first got here, you go into the market, it's a bunch of Filipino customers, you're the white, the token white guys in the corner doing all of this kind of research. But isn't it kind of neat that not only that the local people here make room for you to be part of the community, but also realize that you must be a special person because you're concentrating on something that's important to them, but you weren't born into it.
Yeah, that's true. And Hawaii's a really cool place because it is so diverse here.
Yeah.
And you have people from all over the world coming. And I think that they recognize that the work that we're doing is really important and it will benefit Hawaii too. Like that's what we're doing.
And so now you have your master's degree in what? In what?
Marine science.
And where do you see, outside of this current, you know, gig that you got right now, what's next for you? Where do you want to be?
Well, I really like Hawaii. Mm-hmm. Right now I'm looking at opportunities that will keep me here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I just keeping all my options open, looking at jobs, applying to as much as I can.
Yeah, and the good thing is that there are jobs, but sometimes it's a little bit hard to find them. Yeah. I guess in some respects, too, I want to go back to and reintroduce you to Taylor Fendrick. She is from California, and she is a graduate in marine biology. And obviously it's a little easier. I don't want to say you're a surfer girl, but you're a Southern California girl, right?
Yes, so
you
definitely.
Like, so you got into the ocean right away.
Yeah,
yeah.
I've been into the ocean as long as I can remember.
What did you just graduate as?
I have my bachelor's degree in marine biology.
What's next?
I'm not sure. Just like Joe, I'm kind of keeping my options open. Mm. I am trying to stay on island. Yeah. Working with Cassie and John has definitely made me see where I can go with this. So
I do know that there are probably friends in your life, and I'd say this with all of you, that couldn't really quite figure out where you are going with this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? for instance, with you, Taylor, was there anybody that you grew up with that went to school with that is doing the same thing you're doing?
I've had some people from my hometown that actually came out to HPU also.
Is that right?
Yeah. They didn't end up making it, but.
Well, listen, you know what? I love it. It's a leap of faith. Not everybody makes it in everything,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
In my work, you know, and I hate to tell you this, but I'm in my 56th year of doing this. You got to get fired a few times before you know what you're doing. That just kind of happens. So rejection comes along with promotion. But I still think, and this is why I often say, and this is particularly going back to John and Cassie, is that, you know, we have this huge leap of faith we make in placing trust in something. And one of the things that this fishing show is in its 23rd or 24th year, and for the last many, the council has been one of the sustaining sponsors. So I took a leap of faith with them. They took a leap of faith with us. Isn't that what you guys had to do too? I mean, you put a lot together into this effort to try to create an entity and make a living at doing what you love.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the council is really great to provide that local opportunity and build the capacity for us to do this research on island and bring in more youthful people to keep teaching and producing science.
Just so that people know, you are on an ongoing relationship with the council, but for what length of period at a time? How often are you re-upping?
Depends on the project. Mm-hmm. So we kind of talked last week about our biosampling project, right. Both here and now moving on to Maui. Mm-hmm. So that was a 3-year contract. So that was one of the longer ones. We've also done contracts with Kona crabs. That mm-hmm. was more like a year or so. So it kind of comes and goes as projects.
But what's come to mind, though, Cassie, and I know that at some point in time, everybody has to be practical and have to think, all right, well, where's my paycheck going to keep coming from? What can I, you know, do I buy a house? You know, I mean, what do I do? Do I plant permanent roots? So far, so good?
Yeah, so far, so good. Yeah. I've been working with the council since I was a grad student mm-hmm. at HPU, so my graduate thesis was actually a stock assessment for the council. Mm-hmm. So it's a little unnerving. You never know if you're going to get another contract, but right. I've been lucky enough to be able to get continuous contracts doing a lot of different things with the council. So,
but that it also broadens your base, right?
Yeah.
At what point in time did you all decide that you needed to bring in some help for this particular project, for the biosampling that you did or are doing?
So for this biosampling project, we're going to markets every week. We're cutting open fish every week. Yeah. We're going to tournaments every month. Yeah. And there's only two of us. So we decided we're going to need some help, and it would be really great if we could teach these field skills to students, because a lot of times these students go to class and they want to learn marine biology, but they don't have a lot of actual field work.
That's the next point that I was going to bring. So obviously down the road for both for Joe and Taylor must be the fact that you're doing this because you know your resume building. You know, I mean, once you've done this kind of a thing. So where do you think, I know you're trying to keep on the island, keep your options open, Joe, but where do you think that you're likely to end up? In what job do you think you're going to get next?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I ask the good questions. I get paid medium bucks to ask the big questions.
I think there's a lot of opportunities with places like the council, in fisheries management. And I've been looking at like DNLR and UH jobs as well. Yeah. And there's always, you can go into government like NOAA.
Yeah. You know, I got to laugh because a couple of friends of mine's sons ended up being observers on some of the longline boats. And, you know, they think that's kind of a tough gig, but they got it not necessarily because that's what they wanted to do for a career, but they needed to know that you have to build a lot of little bridges and you have to build a lot of groundwork to do things you want to do later.
Yeah, and all through like my undergraduate and my master's, I was doing like a lot of like crazy jobs, internships, and I was just trying everything that I could just to see what I like and what I don't.
What I'm trying to do is make sure that parents or grandparents or even some of our students, our listeners, are getting into this. And the same thing I'll ask Taylor before I got to move back and talk a little bit about this capacity building at the big picture. Do you find our doors open because you have a degree under your belt now and you may be looking for another one? Does that make it easier to get something to do?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, you couldn't have got this without being worried.
Exactly. Yeah. I reached out to an advisor and I said I just need experience in something, and he threw, you know, this opportunity at me, and I never really saw myself working with dead fish, but it's something that I've really grown to appreciate, and, you know, researching the dead fish.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I learned that, you know, in order to eat them, they have to be, kind of have to kill them. They have to die.
Exactly.
You
know?
but nonetheless, and I think that that's kind of neat. Because I would imagine that for the work that, John, that you guys do, that you and Cassie do, having the opportunity to be able to post these things is important. Where did you decide you needed to get help from?
So, our HPU connection really helped us with the capacity, but we really want to bring all of our work back to the fishermen. Mm-hmm. So we have some preliminary data so far on some of the ages and size and maturity stuff. So we're trying to put together pamphlets and give that back to the fishing community so they see what their contribution was for and can learn from the fishery.
Yeah, you know, Cassie, we looked earlier at looking at what's going on now is on Maui. And talking about the possible differences that you might get from island to island and beach to beach. Had either one of you had any experience on Maui yet?
Yeah, so we just started our biosampling on Maui. Mm-hmm. We were lucky enough to get two UH students from Maui to be our hands over there. Yeah.
So the staff is growing.
Yeah.
It's great.
And we trained them to go to the markets. But the markets are very different than the markets on Oahu. Mm-hmm. They're not as stable as the markets here, as much fish, I guess.
Well, you know, I think one part of it is, and I don't know if you've looked at this, John, this is kind of, to me, I think is important. I've seen on the neighbor islands in all my years of experience, a lot more people fishing on the way home from work. You know, if the water looks good, they've got a pole in the back of their truck or a spear, and they're going to go jump in the water. People on Oahu maybe don't do that as much anymore because they're working two jobs or three jobs just to make ends meet. So aren't you looking at a different fishery?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we see that in the markets. Maybe they're not quite as... Maybe that week they don't have any fish. And maybe the next week they have a lot because weather was great. Yeah. And then there's also a lot of just guys selling out of their trucks along the road. So there's a lot different... market capacity there.
I mean, you know, it's I guess there are some markets that their clients or their customers are so important, they'll call them when the fish comes in. Say, hey, I got me some empachi, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Those real diehard people every week.
Is it going to be the same, Cassie, the same thing on Maui as you've done here on Oahu with this, with all the biosampling? What species are we looking at for Maui?
So for Maui, we're still looking at about the same species, the palani, the pualu, the mu, the table boss, but we're just getting started. So we hardly have any samples there yet. So we still need the full size range there.
I'm dying to pop one on. Do you either one of you know what a pakiki is? Which one is the pakiki? The palani, it's the one with the orange dot on the tail?
The Achilles tail?
Yeah. And that one is always, I always thought, that's the gourmet one because it's got the bright color on it, right? But seriously, I mean, there's a lot of people that really prefer that. We call them the blackfish, you know? But there's a lot of people that prefer to throw that on the barbecue just as it is.
I'll have to try it out. We don't really see it too much in the market.
Yeah,
so.
It really is good. Of course, you have to pull the skin off with pliers. You know that, right? Yeah. How long is the project on Maui?
So... We just started, so we'll have a year of market sampling, and then depending on what samples we already have, it might go another year to get those rest of the samples for our life history work.
So does that mean that you guys got to stay on Maui?
Well, it means that our interns get to stay on Maui, and we get to travel there.
Once
in a while.
But you know, that being said, and sometimes you said, John, it's weather related and everything else. People have to know that you have to have patience and fortitude to do these projects, that they take a while.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You have to get enough samples to have a nice sampling population of or a nice sample of the population to make sure it's actually encompassing.
The work that you're doing on Maui, Cassie, be used?
It'll be compared to what we see here on Oahu. Mm-hmm. So the markets will be the average size at the markets will be compared to the average size at the markets on Maui. And then also we'll compare the life history traits in Maui to the life history traits on Oahu to see if they're maturing at the same age and the same size, or if they're maturing at different sizes and different ages.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And I guess maybe once again, because I'm not sure you're going to have the same kind of negotiator on working with you like Zach is at tournaments, but are there going to be some of them too? Because I do know that neighbor islanders, when they do their tournaments, they're dead serious. It's not just bragging rights, it's food.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's great for us because the two guys we have working out there are both avid fishermen.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been able to help us kind of connect quickly into that community. And
what you got to do is dangle a radio show in front of them. They have to come over. We'll have to come over and do something.
Tell them all about this.
Yeah. One of the things that we talked about earlier in the piece, I want to make sure we get at before it's time to say goodbye, is this thing called capacity building. I want to say it's really critical. As a matter of fact, Malloy, I want to get you back in for a minute. Marlo Sabater and I, we go back several years since when he first came here, and he's been all over the Pacific as well. We're actually kind of blessed, right? Not just this room full of younger people, but the fact that we still seem to have a pool of people that we can draw from.
That's right. Yeah. And, you know, having this pool of people really helps, especially the younger generation, because they will have to transition to the yeah. jobs that yeah. I'm in. So yeah. you guys are probably going to replace me at the council at one yeah. point. And so.
But you know what? Let me tell you something that I've found encouraging. When we say from the bottom up, and I go back, you know, several different scientists with you guys, I've seen guys retire. I've seen a willingness to pass on the baton because everybody knows that they're not going to be there forever. They're going to do other things, but they want to have their department or their thing, their kuleana in good shape to be able to pass it on to somebody else.
Right. And knowing a pool of people that has the capacity as well as, you know, they're battle tested with mm-hmm. regards to doing research is really, really critical. And, you know, having them on the table experience the research phase yeah. as well as how their research feeds into management mm-hmm. is really critical, because you don't just do science for the sake of science. You do you do the science for the sake of management that would impact the lives of the people that's being managed.
You know, we said before, and I don't know if our younger people have ever looked at this, but John, we've said before that just because there's more people on an island and their hunger is to eat fish, it doesn't seem as though the fishery is increasing in population. In other words, the Hawaiian Islands can have so many ahi, right? What do we do when the demand for the fish to eat outgrows our ability to supply it? I mean, where in the thinking does that? Because a lot of what you're doing this stuff, you know, when you're dating these fish and the sizes and everything else, that's assuming that the catch rate stays the same. You know, and doesn't increase to the point where the species goes away.
And that's kind of the point of what we're trying to do, to provide that basic life history mm-hmm. to be used in SOC assessments to be able to tell how many fish can be taken sustainably. Mm-hmm. So even if there's more people, you can't keep taking if yeah. it's not sustainable for the fishery.
I do know, Malloy, that when we've talked about in the past, that there are a lot of local people that just don't understand that. They think that we actually catch all the fish that we eat, and then we export a bunch of fish. And the opposite is true, you know?
That's correct. And, you know, the supply of fish is not, not unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to do the science, do our due diligence to determine what that sustainable level is, and communicate well with our stakeholders as well as the communities.
But what I think is fascinating, the reason I asked the question, was because most of what we do is to do with the pelagic, with the offshore fishery, and that's what the council is. But here is, all of a sudden, wait a minute, we're talking about measuring, you know, Manini's ears, you know? So it's actually, you do, as part of what you do, a lot more than just what's after the 200 miles out.
Right, and it's the council's approach mm-hmm. is ecosystem-based fisheries management. Yeah. So it's not just the fish and how much you harvest, but also the ecosystem, the way from which they live and understand the dynamics within that ecosystem. So yeah. it's not just the pelagic fish, but we also deal with bottom fish as well as reef fish. And reef fish are important components of the nearshore ecosystem. That's why we do this project.
Yeah, one of the things that I found interesting, and you can point this out, is bottom fish, they don't know where they are. I mean, they don't know if they're in international waters or not. They don't know anything. They just know that they are where they are. But what about reef fish? I mean, isn't it amazing how many pelagics will come inshore and avail themselves of reef fish?
And that's part of the whole dynamics of the ecosystem,
yeah.
you know, understanding that dynamics where, you know, at certain parts of the year, some of these pelagic species during periods where the reefs are probably spawning or has high availability yeah. of recruits, those yeah. pelagic fish would come in, and they're probably driven also by the oceanography of the area.
Yeah.
So understanding those different components is really critical for us to know and understand how the fisheries work, as well as how the species within those fisheries work.
There was a guy, and some of our young people in the room will get a kick out of this, was fishing off Bamboo Ridge, and they were fishing off Bamboo Ridge, but they were fishing for Ulua, and they caught a marlin. I mean, right off the beach. I mean, the thing was like 25 feet offshore because it was deep enough. Marlin was just cruising. Can you imagine bringing a marlin up with a flag? Yeah, well, they did. And but I think that, you know, those are kind of the things that drive most of us. And I think that as if we could reach out into this audience and convince a couple of parents or grandparents is to learn like what we are learning about these young people, especially for Cassie, for you and John, it must be really important that you are able to see how short time ago you were the ones that you were the youngsters.
Yeah.
And now you're given this responsibility or this opportunity to produce opportunity for more for young people.
Yeah, so I was given a lot of opportunities by the council and by a couple people at NOAA too to get a lot of field experience and research under my belt where I didn't have that field experience before. And so now it's a great opportunity for me to give that field research and experience to younger.
What was your first assignment where you thought, "Wow, I got hired. I got accepted. I'm recruited."
I got to go on a couple NOAA research cruises to Johnston, Samoa, and the Marianas with NOAA.
And what was your task? What were you doing on those trips?
So on those trips, I was bottom fishing and I was processing the fish, so taking out the otoliths and gonads and working as the fish processor on the...
And what about you, John?
So with my master's project, I was working with the council on Akule. So we were doing an aerial
observation. That's what I remember. That's what I'm talking
about. That's why we first met was on that Akule project.
Yeah. Where we were looking at them aerially.
Right. Yeah. So our pilot was able to estimate biomass from the air so we could compare that.
It's amazing because when I was in the Akule business years and years ago, we had a pilot could tell the difference between Hallelujah and Akule.
Yeah,
it's amazing, really. Just by the shadows that they were casting.
Yeah, I went up with our pilot a few times, and every time he would point at it and fly around in a circle, and then I still couldn't see it until they finally moved. I'm like, oh, okay, that's not a rock.
That's not a rock. It's sort of an interesting way, and that's why I think I wanted to make sure that we spent a few minutes talking about that, because I think that if a parent, like I said, or a grandparent or a brother or sister, they really want to be encouraging these people that have that idea to follow it, you know? There must be a lot of times for all of you where you've thought, gee, am I really making the right choice here? Am I going to be able to survive doing this?
I think we all ask ourselves that. And a lot of marine science, you have to do a lot of volunteering first, so.
Well, it's always...
It's more of the passion that gets you through it, I think.
It's always nice to hook up. So for our young people, Joe and Taylor, thanks for coming in and being with us. Zach, nice seeing you again. And, of course, John and Cassie and Marlo, big full studio full of people. And if you want to know more about what we're doing here, you got to go to wpcouncil.org, wpcouncil.org. And if you want to hear something on the show, email me, themikebuckshow@gmail.com, themikebuckshow@gmail.com. Good fishing. See you next week.